folks, and welcome or welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima Magen, and this podcast was brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis, a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for the past 2 decades, 8 years of which he's been actively buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in the city on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So his company has a dedicated loan officer in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions. So you're probably already aware that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or if you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on emil.gorgis, that's emil.gorgis, emil.gorgis@tokyorealty.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. So for today's episode, this is a recording of a call with an Australian gentleman who's been living in Japan for quite a while. He's purchased a family home about a decade ago, and then he had to resell it. And he feels that he might have gotten the short end of the stick on that deal. He wanted to make sure he's better prepared for his next home purchase, which he's planning on in the next year or two. So a bit of a cautionary tale there to start with, but then we talk about shopping around for the right home loan, borrowing capacity and loan terms, and also about how to choose not only the right loan, but also the right property. How not all realtors, even in Japan, necessarily have the buyer's best interest in mind. So we talk about how to conduct proper due diligence on our own, research, the resale value of homes in Japan, which factors should be taken into account when choosing between properties, in particular condo units. We also talk about potential conflict with neighbors in Japan, which is a big issue if you're going to be living in the property yourself. The differences between condo buildings that are managed by investor owners as opposed to owners occupiers. We do some deal analysis on some of the potential properties that he's considering for purchase so far. And we also touch upon what it actually takes for someone to start working in the Japanese real estate property arena. So all in all, a pretty diverse conversation. This was audio only, so you don't need to jump to YouTube to see our faces. There's no faces to be seen. We do delve into quite a few interesting topics there. I hope you find value in it. Enjoy the chat, and I'll see you again on the other side. Okay, cool. So thank you for agreeing to be recorded, because you've mentioned you've got a bit of a cautionary tale there that you wanted to lay out, right?
Yeah, just in regards to doing our research, really. I mean, it wasn't the real estate was trying to do anything dodgy, but more that we hadn't kind of done our research as to what our rights were, I guess, in terms of getting the home loan. So as far as what happened, we kind of jumped into the sale, and we didn't know that we could have applied for a bank loan without paying the deposit.
Can you run me through just backtrack a little bit? What kind of property was it, and what sort of loan were you applying for?
Oh, okay.
So was this a family home or an investment property, or what was it?
Oh yeah, so this is all for just a family home.
Okay.
It was a three years old house.
Yep.
It was 26 million when it was new. It was on the market for 23. We paid that. I think we got maybe 500,000 yen discount.
Yeah.
We
500,000, you mean?
500,000 yen.
Yep.
So we weren't, I had my permanent residency now, but I didn't have it then. So we're a little bit worried about how it would go. Like, I didn't even think I could maybe get the loan at the time. Because of that, I think we're also a little bit sort of unsure whether we could get it, and we didn't really want to. It's not that we didn't want the house; it was more just a test to see if we could even get a loan.
Yeah.
But we ended up paying the Tetsu Genkin.
Yep.
The application fee for 1,000,000 yen, and we didn't realize at that point that we wouldn't be able to get that back. So of course that's totally our mistake. But the real estate we're working with now let us apply for the bank loan without having to pay that. So more like a loan check.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what we wanted to do in the beginning, but because we hadn't done our research, we didn't know that we could apply that way. So we sort of dove straight in, paid the deposit, and then they said, oh, if you have any extra money that will help you in your application, please see if you can borrow some money from your family, which my wife was able to do.
Under the assumption that what? That if you pay a down payment, it makes it easier for the bank to approve the loan?
Exactly, yeah. So they kind of just kept us on the line.
And I mean, you've mentioned that you've spoken to Emil. I'm not a huge expert on mortgages. So is that a real thing? Is it easier for the bank to approve if you do put in a cash deposit?
Well, I don't really know, but we thought so. And we got an extra 4,000,000 yen. And we dumped that into it as well as the deposit. But now I'm applying 8 years later with no deposit. I do have my permanent residency, but I'm 47 now, so I'm much older, and it doesn't seem to be a problem. Actually, I have some good news. Yesterday, we got the pre-approval.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
That's brilliant. I did hear that, 100% or 105%, whatever it is, full cost loans are possible without a PR, but they are more challenging because apparently the lender does want to review your sort of employment longevity in Japan, potential for employment longevity in Japan. So if they are under the impression that maybe your job security is not that much guaranteed, then they do actually only offer, I think, 80 or 70% or whatever it is. So to give that agent some credit, maybe that has really been a thing. So maybe, I'm not sure what your employment status was at the time, but maybe, were you already under application for a PR at the time or just?
What's a PR?
Permanent residency.
Yeah, no, it was permanent residency. I think applying at the time, so. Yeah, I think we told the bank that it was, yeah, under application.
So they probably just wanted to make it easier for them, I suppose.
I guess so, yeah. Yeah. So as far as the loan goes, it looks like it's no problem to do it this way. And if we'd known that 8 years ago, it would have saved us a lot of money, actually. So
Yeah. Okay, so that's on the loan front, and then how did the rest of the purchase pan out?
It was really smooth. I don't speak Japanese or write or read, so my wife handled all of it, and except for myself having just to write my address on multiple documents, it was pretty easy. What happened though? We ended up moving out a year later.
Okay.
On that property, and what was the difficulty there was reselling the house. It was only a year we lived in it, but we had to sell it for 18 million. So already it depreciated by 5 million yen in a year. And as I sent you in my email, I in my head, I was still thinking Australian real estate market as it, you know, just keeps going up and up and up. And I thought, even a bad investment would still, at least we could break even.
That is quite a steep decline, though, even for Japan, because you're talking a relatively new property. So it's true that, you know, the land is the only thing that can gain in value, but still within a year. So, I mean, again, not knowing the details and the location and not having researched it, I would assume that either the area for some reason has gone, you know, significantly down in popularity over that period of time. Or it might have been just overpriced to begin with.
I think a little of both. We bought towards the mountains in Osaka.
Yeah.
So it was still connected by rail. There was a small station quite close, not an express line, but a local station was quite close. It had some views of the city as well, which again I thought would be, you know, a great selling point, but here it doesn't really seem to be as much as it would be in Australia.
Not compared to other things, no.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they value convenience more and things like that.
Plus, they like to. I mean, I don't know if it's a privacy thing or what, but they keep the windows shuttered most of the time in Japan.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
views and sunlight, unless it's on a balcony, is really not that much.
Yeah, so I think maybe we'd chosen well from an Australian standard or a Western standard, I suppose, if you'd like to say that. And it was a little bit far out from the city, which most people obviously are not very interested in, near the mountains. There was no supermarket within walking distance.
Yeah.
All of those sort of amenities weren't there. So, I think that hit the resale value. And my wife found out as we were selling it that it had been purchased by the real estate for $15 million.
Yeah.
And that was because the previous owner sold it directly to them.
Yeah.
And it seems like they just wanted to, they said it was a family emergency, so they just unloaded it and took the loss, maybe about 10 million yen. So the real estate bought it for 15 and then put it on the market for 23.
Without any renovation or anything?
No, so they were eyeing huge profits there and they saw us coming.
Talk about so overpriced, that is overpriced, okay.
Yeah, so... Yeah. We should have done our research and I should have known the market here in Japan. Yeah,
yeah.
So it was a whole lot of errors that we made on our part, plus a little bit of trickery, I would say, from the real estate as far as them not explaining we could apply for a pre-approval without having to.
And the price. Okay.
And I mean, the price,
less than 100% disclosure, I would say, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, we had looked at a number of houses around that area because we wanted the view and to be a little bit out of the city, have the mountains there for hiking and things like that. But in the end, yeah, it probably was a little overpriced. But at the time, 8, 10 years ago, it was around average of what for the three-bedroom.
And I was going to say, I mean, as owners, occupiers, it's really a matter of whether you like the place and you're comfortable with the price, you know, from your own financial standpoint kind of thing. There's not as many investment-related considerations to be made when you're buying a owner-occupied home. And in Japan specifically, houses are not really the asset class of choice for investment just because of the non-durable materials and the high maintenance and so forth. So maybe, but you're saying you had to move out after a year, so that would have been what, because of like work or personal circumstances, or?
Yeah, it was more personal circumstances. There seemed like there was a neighbor there right next to us that were not very happy about the noise. I told you I have 4 children, so
yeah,
we make a lot of noise whether we try to or not, and even trying to keep it down is still pretty noisy for us.
I know the feeling, especially in a mixed international family, kids don't tend to be as, I guess the Japanese would call it not as well behaved. I wouldn't label it that way, but yeah.
And I guess there's times where my wife is kind of telling my children off in Japanese and me not understanding, I start telling them off in English and the mom just told us the same thing in Japanese. That.
Story of my life, that.
Yeah, so it's
and that neighbor, by the way, could have been the reason for what was presented as a family emergency. Maybe they were giving a hard time to the sellers as well.
I think Perhaps, yes, that
I
would be
know a
the case.
few families that, especially international families, but also Japanese families that have relocated because of really, I want to say, abusive neighbors, right? That's not it's not that rare in Japan, unfortunately.
Yeah, we experienced that, and we weren't prepared to spend the rest of our life next to these people, so we just pulled out, and then tried to sell the place, and took the loss. But yeah, now we're trying to purchase the second property again.
So when was this? When was the sale?
Of the house,
When did you resell it? Yeah, how long ago?
I think about 8 years ago.
Okay, and since then you've been what, just renting?
Living with my wife's parents, actually.
Okay, how's that?
Yeah, that's good. It doesn't sound as bad as what you might think. We actually have on the land we have at the moment, there's two houses. So
Okay.
they're sitting right next to each other, basically. We share the same outdoor space,
Yep.
but at least we have our own kind of space as far as kitchen and living room and
Okay, it's not too bad. All right. Yeah.
So yeah, we're not right living with them
Yeah.
right on top of each other. So yeah, so that's not too bad. We've been here for about 8 years since then,
Yep.
and yeah, now we're looking at an apartment. My son's entering junior high school next year.
Oh, same here.
Yeah, I was listening to one of your podcasts, and
Yeah.
so we're moving to get him closer to a good school that he can attend.
Okay.
But this again is a little bit like what we did when we moved out to the mountains. We're actually going the other way towards the ocean. I don't know if you're familiar with Osaka, but it has quite a lot of reclaimed land out in the
Yep.
bay. Out there is where the cargo ships dock and unload all their stuff, and there's power stations and all sorts of transport kind of hubs and things out there. And in the center of this reclaimed island that's surrounded by loading docks and all sorts of stuff, industrial sites, there's a sort of, they've created this place called Port Town, Nanko Port Town.
Yep.
And it's just giant high-rise apartments, massive numbers on the sides. And we're trying to buy an apartment in one of those, on one of the upper floors.
Okay, so the first one was a house, this one's a condo.
This one's, yeah.
Okay.
So, 4 bedroom.
Gotcha.
Great aspect, again, great views. But sits on reclaimed land. It's 1981 was its construction date, so its planning was pre what was it?
Earthquake resistant standards, yeah.
Yeah, so it just missed the most recent changes. So that's probably going to hurt resale value if we decide we want to get out of this one as well.
Well, the other factor to consider there is not just the resale value, is also the fact that buildings that that are at that age point, there's going to be a new legislation supposedly coming in the next few years. It was supposed to be this year, but then they've sort of pushed it back without actually specifying a date. But at some point, I think it will go in, and that's going to put more of an onus on owner unions to better maintain buildings once they reach 40 years of age. And they were talking again, this is all, there's no clear details yet, but they were talking about a certificate system, whereas building owner unions that comply with the new requirements would get a kind of good management certificate. And they could choose not to comply and then they wouldn't get that certificate. They're not going to tear the building down or anything, but there might be, so two things might happen there. One is that there might be suddenly a market for certified and non-certified properties, which of course would affect your resale value even more significantly. Or the other thing is, if the owner union suddenly starts scrambling to comply with the new regulations, they would definitely have to bring building fees up substantially to catch up on renovations and repairs and proper management procedures and so forth, which would then just increase the monthly expenses. So when you're looking at whether you're comfortable or not, because condos obviously come with monthly fees, when you're looking at those monthly fees, if you're looking at a building that's this old, I would probably just take a worst case scenario where building fees might be, say, doubled. and then see if you're still comfortable with that if and when it does happen, because that could be a very real issue in, let's say, 5, 6 years, or worst case scenario, maybe even sooner.
Yeah, I think the building fees were quoted 8,000 for management, 8,000 yen per month, and 12,000 yen for maintenance. So
Oh, that's
total.
already pretty steep. Okay. I mean,
Yeah.
in Japan standards, I know in Hawaii you sometimes pay $1,000 a month, but for Japan standards, that's pretty steep.
Right, okay. I was looking at one website that was saying 300 yen per square meter, apartment size.
Yep. Oh, that's right. It's a
And
family-sized apartment. No, that's probably pretty average then. Huh?
okay, yeah, I
Yeah,
just
sorry, I'm
calculated.
thinking about studios and two-bedroomers. Okay.
Oh, okay, yeah,
Yep.
so this is a 4-bedroom, yeah, so it's when I did that quick calculation, that was about 30,000 yen per
Okay,
month.
so say it goes up to 40,000 yen. Are you still okay with that on a monthly basis?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm the sole. I work. My wife is still looking after our little ones at
Yeah.
home, so we're on single income at the moment. But I think maybe once they start at elementary school, she'll probably start looking for work.
Okay.
So once we're on a double income, I don't think the repayments will be so difficult.
And not the mortgage repayments, I'm talking about the monthly condo fees.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That
So
makes
if
sense.
those fees go up from 20,000 yen to say 40,000 yen, are you still okay with that?
I won't be happy
Yeah.
about it, but yeah, I guess we'll have to deal with it if that happens.
I'm just saying that because it's a very real consideration considering the age of the building.
I think I guess I'll talk with my wife about that
Yeah.
after the call. Yeah, I didn't realize there was another set of standards coming in.
It was published originally as definitely happening mid-2022. And so we actually published an article about it and, sort of advice to our clients to try and aim away from anything that's older than 30 years. And then when I looked at it again, it just said it changed from 2022 to under consideration. So whether they're going, I don't think they'll complete, I mean, they might, taper it down. I don't think they'll take it completely off the books because older buildings and their maintenance have been an issue in Japan. Sometimes they're just an eyesore, sometimes they're actually dangerous to live in, right? Because owner unions, head of the owner union dies, nobody actually replaces them, there are no regular meetings taking place, there's no building management company coming in regularly to inspect and provide renovation plans and so forth. And I don't see that situation changing without some government action. So, I mean, they might have pushed it back because of COVID and, things are tough enough as it is financially for owner unions, or it might be just that they're trying to better define what's going to be included. But I think there's a very real chance of this happening, at least I'd say a few years down the track, if not sooner. So if and when that does happen, I guess there will be some scrambling involved in owner unions, at least the ones that are not being super well managed. It could be the case. I mean, when you evaluate a condo unit for purchase, it's a good idea to look at the renovation history of the building, so at least the last 10 years, say, and then check how much they've got in their reserve funds and try to correlate the two. So make sure that either big ticket items like the exterior, the roof, the elevator system, make sure that those have been done in the last, say, with elevators, maybe in the last 15 years, with the rest of the things, maybe in the last 10 years. Because if they haven't been done, they're definitely going to be needed soon. And then if they haven't been done in the last 10, 15 years, you want to look at the reserve funds pool and make sure that the building reserve funds actually have enough to cover a renovation of that extent. And if none of that has been done in the last 10 years and the reserve funds pool is depleted or, has less in it than we'd like to see, then you would definitely should be taking into account that those building fees will go up because they'll have to start collecting money for the next big renovation or they'll have to take out a loan for the next big renovation. In both cases, they'll have to jack building fees up significantly. And so not necessarily a deal breaker, but maybe something to negotiate price on. Just to factor in that you will be paying more on a monthly fee. And if there's no renovation history of the last 10 years and there's no renovation plan, then that's definitely a mismanaged building, and that's definitely going to be an issue if that new legislation comes in, or even if it doesn't.
Right, yeah, that's good to know. We got the maintenance schedule from the real estate agent.
It does exist. Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
No, some of
And
them just don't have it, right? So it's a valid point, yeah.
the one we got looked to be managed quite well. I think
Okay.
it's has there's a company that's looking after it. It's not a owner occupier run
Yep.
system, so there's no chairman or anything like that. And
But they are making plans, like there is a renovation schedule.
yeah, I think the next big renovation is happening in the next couple of years, actually. They seem the website I was looking at, it said the first renovation should happen 10 to 13 years, and then the next within the next 20, and then
Yep,
so
and then at
forth.
this age it goes down to every 10 years or so. So, I'm. Did you also check out the meeting summaries for the last, let's say, the most recent one, to see if they're talking about raising building fees?
Actually, no, I'll have to get the wife on
Definitely have a
that.
peek at that. Yeah,
Yeah.
because usually when they draw the renovation schedule, that's usually when they'll start talking about potentially raising fees to meet that schedule. And
Okay.
I mean, it takes time for everyone to vote on it, and they put out a few offers, and people can take if they want to raise it by 10% or 20% or 50% or what have you. So there's a lot of conversations going on. It can take about 2 years, but I think if the renovation schedule is already out, then you should be able to see whether they've started that discussion. It'll just give you a rough idea of what to expect when it does go through, because eventually they will vote on raising the fees. They don't have a choice. If the building is mainly single or two bedroom units, it's mostly going to be investment properties, not many owners occupiers. And investors tend to just, I mean, they're planning to resell within 5 or 10 years anyway, so they'll just vote no, 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 no on any renovation plan. But with owner occupiers who actually are living in the building, they would usually take better care of it, and they would vote to go ahead and raise the fees to catch up. So just have a look at that, so maybe it'll give you a better idea of what to expect and when.
Okay, yeah, I'll definitely check that. I think as an investment, as I said, it's probably not very attractive for most investors, just for where it's situated and aging building.
Yep, that definitely not something that we would advise to our clients to invest in. But for an owner-occupier home, again, it's not necessarily a consideration.
So yeah, I listened to a few of your other podcasts, and I figured out that yeah, this is not an investment property, but
Yeah.
more for our children's, I guess, school and things like that.
Yeah,
And
for
I mean,
sure.
it's not a bad place to live. It sort of has a slower pace than the city, but not very far away from the cities.
Yep.
Yeah.
And how many units in the building, by the way?
I think about. Oh, I'm guessing here about 40, I think. The block itself is connected to another one by a sort of an open walkway between these two huge pillars.
So it's a single development, but two separate buildings. Looks like
How
it.
do I?
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. I'd have to show you a photo to so you could sort of understand how. Yeah, there's I think in the area there's about six or seven of these enormous apartments.
And the other one is roughly the same size, is it? We interrupt this broadcast. I always wanted to say this. We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, or if you just need summer quiet to hide away from the world. So they offer a variety of options for families, for corporate relocations, or simply if you're transitioning between homes in Tokyo. Now, the properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people.
So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They've got fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens, and they're just a delight to stay in, a fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but long-term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profits, or a holiday home that you want rented out when not in use via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth your visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at emil.gorgies, G-O-R-G-E-E-S, at tokyorealty.jp.
It sort of looks like an open book on its end, if you...
Okay, so I'm just thinking from an en bloc sale perspective, like let's say a developer comes in and, you know, the building's getting old, getting too expensive to maintain, they'll start looking at offers from developers. If you're talking about 80 to 100 units, I mean, it also depends on how big the land parcel is, but basically it's more challenging for developers to offer compensation to 80 or 100 unit owners than it is to say, you know, a smaller building with maybe 20, 30 units. So you can't really expect to get a super good offer if and when the time does come to sell it. So don't assume that resale value, so resale value to the general public is not going to be that attractive because it's over 40 years old and pre-earthquake, latest earthquake resistance standards. And resale value to a developer is also not going to be super attractive because there's a lot of units that they'll need to compensate. So again, just something to factor in if you're maybe, are you still in a point where you can maybe negotiate the price a bit?
Yeah, my wife talked to the real estate yesterday after we got the pre-approval, and they said they could probably get it down another million yen. The price has been dropped twice already. So I don't think we could probably push much further.
What's a million percentage-wise? How much is the price, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, yeah, no problem. I think it was listed about 23 million.
Okay.
And we hope... Oh no, sorry, 24 as renovated, 4-bedroom, and it's I think about 22 now.
Okay. And you're hoping to get it down to 2021?
Yes. 22. We're hoping to get it to 22 now.
So, okay, I mean, look, for a family sized condo unit in Osaka, it's not a bad price. But it will definitely sell for less down the track, especially if you've been living it for like, you know, 5, 6, 8 years or what.
Yeah. And as far as a like long term, the loan we got approved for is 30 years. I'm 47 now, so that puts it 77 years old. I mean, I'll get a small pension because I have been working here for more than 10 years.
Okay, that's unusual though at your age.
What?
To get a loan for 30 years.
Yeah, I know. I was honestly quite surprised we got pre-approval yesterday.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking like if we do stay in this long term, 30 years down the track, I'm sort of worried about how the condition of the building.
I don't think I very much doubt you'll stay there for 30 years. If the building is 42 years old now, 41 years old now, in most maximum 10 years, probably earlier, you're going to start getting, the owner union is going to start getting offers from developers. And you'll probably find that they're seriously discussing that, and eventually they will resell the building. So you're looking at a situation where you're basically buying it, getting the most that you can out of it to live in, and then just getting whatever you can get when, you know, when they decide to sell it, which they will most definitely do. I mean, I don't know many. I know of one or two buildings that we've got customers that purchased in that's reached 50 years of age. And they haven't gotten any offer. I mean, the smaller building did get offers and ended up selling at kind of market price, maybe a bit lower. The bigger is not getting any offers because it's 200 plus units, and there's no way that a developer is going to, I mean, it's a fantastic location, but there's no way that a developer is going to be interested in compensating 200 units, or no, 250, I think it is. It's a monster. You're probably in a similar situation with this one. So kind of assume, I mean, see how much you're saving on rent over that period of time. Don't assume more than 10 years. And then factor in that you're probably going to be selling it, I wouldn't say at half the price, but let's call it 70% or 75% of what you purchased it for. And then see if that makes sense for you financially.
Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that, and I'm kind of factoring in my age, like say, for example, 57 or 60 years old.
Yeah.
Having to sell this to a developer at a loss and still having to perhaps repay the leftover amount of the home loan back to the bank while finding a new rental property.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how much, depends on how much you've saved on rent in the interim, right?
Well, yeah, I guess.
That's really the only thing I'd be looking at. If you're looking at, if you do want to consider resale value, don't buy this one, buy another one.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I'll definitely have to talk to the, talk to my wife about this, and yeah, that was one thing that was probably the biggest worry about the whole investment, not investment, the whole purchase of this building.
Yeah, so I mean, whatever you're saving on rent multiplied by, let's say, 10 years, let's assume we're talking about 10 years, whatever you're saving, I mean, it could be that it, you know, just stay there longer than that, but let's assume 10 years. Whatever you're saving on rent, then try to compare that with maybe a potentially newer, younger building. Let's say something that's like 30 years instead of 40 plus. And see if the difference in purchase price there is really, I mean, if it would have to be really significant for me to consider buying the older one. That's what I'm saying. Because with a 30-year-old building, if you sell it in 6-7 years, you do have some, I mean, I don't know about gains, but you could be selling it pretty close to what you purchased it at. Whereas with this one, that's definitely not going to be the case.
And so I guess you're suggesting that if we just continue renting forever, I guess, instead of buying.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying look for a younger building that you can afford with the loan that you can get.
I had read somewhere that renting for the rest of your life could also be cost effective if you find a cheap enough place.
In most countries, I would say that's definitely a consideration, but with the cost of borrowing in Japan, it's really a no-brainer to get an owner-occupied property for your home, right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you're basically getting very close to free money in Japan. I'm assuming, I mean, I don't know your situation, but I'm assuming it's the usual, so 0.5, 0.6% or so?
I think so. I think that's what we're at the moment.
I mean, for that cost of borrowing, why wouldn't you, right? It definitely makes a lot more sense than renting and throwing money away. But I would look at something that you'd actually have some resale value on when you do exit that loan. I mean, you would obviously, I mean, it's not going to go down to zero, but it's going to be the depreciation in the market price is going to be far faster and bigger for this one than something that's even 10 years younger.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's probably why this place has been on the market for 3 months now, hence the dropping price.
Yeah.
So
whoever's buying it is pretty much gonna, assuming that they're gonna be riding it till it drops, kind of thing. And I don't know that I would do that if you're only gonna get 6, 7, 8, 10 years out of it. If you're buying something that, you know, you're going to get a good 20 years of use out of, then maybe it does make sense. But if you're buying something that you're going to have to resell in 10 years' time, that's ride it till it drops is not a good strategy, right?
All right. Yeah. I mean, there's another place where actually the real estate we're working with is really being really flexible. They've got us the pre-approved loan for about $23 million.
By the way, another question, I'm not sure who the lender is, but the fact that they're giving you a 30-year loan when you're 47, and that they're considering a building as old as that, that's a heck of a lender. I don't know many of them. And you're saying the interest rate is roughly on par with whatever the rest of the market is getting. Quite the unusual lender you've got there.
UFJ... who we bought the previous house with, they declined to give us the loan here. It was a smaller bank. What was the name of it? Oh, sorry, my wife wrote it down.
That's right, a local Osaka bank, I assume, right?
I guess so, yeah. Some maybe they have some connection to the real estate, so...
I mean, they would. Plus, the local banks are a lot more aggressive. They've got a lot of competition to put up with, so they do tend to be a lot more flexible. But, you know, even saying that, that's really flexible. Like,
yeah, I mean, we had to get a guarantor company.
Yeah.
To work with, and one declined, and another one agreed to work with us at a little bit of a higher rate. I'm gonna have to ask about that actually. But that was the condition. So I think it was an extra. The home loan we got quoted was about ¥100,000 per month, and with this new guarantor company, I think it was about ¥103,000
per month. Yep.
So it just went up a little bit, and of course, I'm sure that's because of my age.
Yeah, but I mean, look, compared to the price of the property, that's peanuts, right?
Yeah, in the long term. Yeah.
So. It's a good deal. You got a good deal with the loan. The only thing I'm concerned about is, like you said, what happens when it's time to resell and you haven't even gotten enough to pay off the mortgage, right?
Yeah, that's our biggest worry. So.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah, we're going to have to talk about that. Like you said, I don't know how I will feel in 10 years' time. But if we're having to stay in Japan for the rest of our lives, then it's probably not a bad place to be, I guess, out there by the ocean. So.
Yeah, and I mean, look, even if you move out, you would be able to rent the place out. It's not the best investment, but it's not like you're going to be struggling to find a tenant. If it's, you know, portside Osaka, nicely maintained, well-managed building, high-rise views, it's not going to... I mean, and you're saying it's pretty accessible to train lines and so forth.
Yeah, I think it has a also has a direct bus to the airport.
Yep.
Just next door. The Osaka Expo, the Japan Expo, will be on the next reclaimed island over.
Okay.
In the, so yep. I'm hoping there might be some sort of infrastructure or development.
Yeah, just bear in mind the owner union is not going to let you Airbnb it. The most you'll be able to do if you're lucky is maybe monthly rentals as opposed to long-term rentals.
And I heard you can. I heard on another one of your podcasts that you can get in trouble with the bank if you try to rent it out on a home loan.
If they find out, for sure, yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I was aware of that. But we're going to look at another property tomorrow. Another condo tomorrow.
Yep.
In the same area, but this one's a top floor.
Okay.
It's 20 million yen. It passed Shin Taishin, so it's. I think. I don't know. Hopefully it might be 30 years old.
Well, I mean, it only needs to be 1 year younger than what you've got there to pass that, so that's not necessarily saying that it's not 40 years old.
Yeah. Unrenovated though, but yeah, but the real estate has said if you want, you can change that loan over to that and apply.
And how can you find out how old that one is? Is it indeed closer to 30 or is it still close to 40?
Oh, I'm not sure. I can find all that information tomorrow.
The closer you can get to 30, the more comfortable I'd feel.
Okay, yeah, since you've said that's a kind of magic number there, I'll start searching for those kind of, that age building. Yeah, so I think when I first contacted you, the question about my age versus building age, I think that was my greatest concern.
But now you got pre-approved, so that's all out the window.
I really was quite surprised to get the call yesterday. So we have a little bit of bargaining power, I feel now.
Yeah, you definitely do. And I mean, look, you're saying that's 20 million and it's younger, so it does sound like there should be, you know, how far could you stretch your budget considering that you're getting 100% loan? How far do you think you could stretch your budget as far as mortgage repayments go? Like, could you go to say 30 million or would that be too far?
Like if you try to calculate mortgage repayments at 25% of monthly income, I could probably, my wife's not working at the moment. I'm on about 4 million a year, so pretty low. I guess I'm your stereotypical English teacher here.
It's not bad in Japan. It's definitely livable. Although you've got four kids, so.
Each time we had a kid, living got a bit tighter.
If you could potentially stretch it towards 30 million and could potentially look at something that's, say, 25, 30 years instead of 35, 40 years, you'd be really serving yourself well in the long term when it comes to resale value.
Okay.
Yeah. But if it's a stretch and it's going to make things uncomfortable just, you know, with daily living, then just go as young as you can within your budget.
Yeah.
The other option is to compromise on space, right? So you could get something cheaper if it was a 3LDK instead of a 4LDK, or if it was, you know, 80 square meters instead of 120 square meters. But that's, you know, that's, again, that's personal choices. I can't really dictate that. But from a financial perspective, the younger you can get, I would definitely stretch at least my budget, if not my living space, to try and get it younger. Just from a purely financial perspective.
As far as the pre-approval, it's kind of strange because we had to apply for the loan with this apartment at the price of 22 million. But the real estate said if you want to change and reapply for the loan with another apartment, then we'll have to go through the whole process again.
Well, then you've got if you're looking at that other one that's 20 million, you've got the cost of renovation too, right?
Yeah, so I was just wondering how the bank, what I would like to do in a perfect world is ask the bank how far they're willing to lend. With the first house we bought as well, I felt there was a lot of sort of secrecy as to how much we could borrow and the whole procedure behind it. So I feel as though I don't really know what's going on with this whole, the whole purchase, basically.
According to Emil, who's way more versed in loans than I am, it's essentially seven times your annual salary, right?
Yeah, well, those calculations I did, and that is about 30 million.
Yeah.
So The bank, they, nobody says you can borrow up to that or you can borrow this much. They say, oh, okay, we'll approve you for this property only kind of thing. So.
Yeah, so I mean, look, speak to the agent. You're saying that agent is pretty flexible and communicates fairly well. So tell them, okay, well, if we're looking at a different property and we want to factor in renovation costs as well, because we've just renovated one of our family-sized apartments, and that was about 3.5 or 4 million yen.
Okay.
For the renovation, I'm assuming something similar, maybe a bit more, because I think it sounds like your apartment is a bit bigger than the one that we just renovated. So factor that. I think the bank can factor renovation costs into the loan and give you a loan including that. So,
yeah, that,
sorry, go ahead.
That's what we were thinking about with this one we're going to look at tomorrow.
Yeah.
Perhaps add the renovation costs on. But then, I was sort of worried perhaps we might get rejected for the loan if we're pushing too far with those sorts of things.
Well, I mean, 20 plus renovation is not going to be above 25, right? So, it's not such a big leap. And again, if you look at something a little bit younger, maybe a little bit smaller, maybe the total cost for a renovated property would be 25, 26, I don't know, so... still, again, I, if in a perfect world, I'd be a lot more comfortable going for the younger interior renovation is really not a concern. I mean, it's obviously a concern because you have to pay for it, but I mean, looking at future resale value, interior renovation is not a huge concern. Investors will factor in, you know, the 4 or 5 million. And if they're a real estate company buying off you, they can do it even cheaper than that. So, they would not be as concerned about the interior condition as they would be about the age of the building.
Right. Okay. Well, I think, I guess after talking to you now, going for the cheaper one and adding the renovation cost onto the home loan is probably the better option.
It is, and especially if it's closer to 30 years, because the fact that it's up to latest earth requisition standard compared to the other building you were mentioning, could be just a 6 months difference in age. That's all it takes to go past June 1981, right? Which is when those latest plans were drawn. So if it's closer to 30, let's say if it's 31, 32, 33, definitely a better choice. If it's closer to 40, I mean, look, it's still better than the other one because it is latest earthquake, but maybe shop around a little bit more.
I've drawn a blank now.
You're right.
That's okay. Yeah, I think.
No, you can hit me up by email if you remember. You have further follow-up questions. Don't be shy.
I've lost it.
You're right, don't worry about it.
Edit that part out. as far as, can we change tack here a little bit? I think I've got all the information I wanted from as far as buying this apartment and looking at apartments and stuff.
Yep.
But I was kind of curious, in my position as somebody who doesn't have basically any capital and just a English teacher's salary, is there any way you could get into the real estate market? I was listening to one of your podcasts. There was an Australian lady on, I forget her name, but she said she was specializing in buying sort of quirky properties for quite cheap, renovating them and then renting them as minpaku and short-term rentals.
Yep. She buys some and others she just has an arrangement with the owners where she either subleases them or she just provides a service to the owners by leasing them out. That's definitely a viable business to get into. There are some things to qualify you as a minpaku management company. So there's licensing to be involved, and that's of course, 100% in Japanese. So just the way you've described your Japanese level, that might be something that would be maybe more viable if your wife was willing to get involved.
Right, okay.
On your own, I mean, look, you could do this as an intermediary. So you could hire these minpaku management companies and just help them with marketing and getting clients in exchange for a cut of their commission kind of thing. So maybe, but again, I mean, for you to be attractive to these companies, it would have to be a strictly Japanese company that doesn't really know how to access the foreign market, because that's where your specialty could come in.
Oh, I see.
And for that, again, to communicate with the contractors or the clients, let's call it, you will need somebody pretty fluent in Japanese.
I listened to a lot of your podcasts and I was quite kind of motivated and inspired to hear other foreigners in Japan succeeding without having to kind of resort to teaching English here.
I can tell you that none of us do it without either having a very strong grasp of the Japanese language or teaming up with a Japanese partner or working for a Japanese company that's, willing to take you on as a non-Japanese speaker because they realize that you've got value in getting foreign clients, right? But I don't know that you want to move from English teaching to working for a Japanese company. That doesn't sound like a lifestyle upgrade to me.
Yeah, that's something to consider as well, I suppose. I think that's probably covered everything I wanted to ask you.
Awesome.
So thanks so much for doing this. I mean, I listened to a lot of people you spoke to, and they seem to be very knowledgeable and well presented. So I'm thankful that you could talk,
Oh no,
take the
thank you for
time to
saying that. I
talk to someone
appreciate
like
that.
me. Yeah.
I'm glad you're enjoying it. It's I love to talk shop, like I love what I do, so I'm really happy doing this regardless of whether it's a potential client or just a somebody in the industry or somebody who's just asking questions. It's all good fun and it brings us value via content and more exposure too, so.
Well, yeah, if you when you re-listen to this, if it turns out good, I'm hoping it can
I can guarantee it
help.
turns out good. We've touched about a lot of things that a lot of people are asking about, so definitely value in there for a lot of people. So thank you for that.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Awesome. So have a great weekend, and again, feel free, as long as it's general questions and we don't have to actually do any digging into particular properties, we're always happy to provide advice. There's no charge involved, so don't be shy.
Oh, thank you so much. At the least, I'll definitely keep you updated as to how I proceed and what we end up purchasing now that we've got pre-approval. So,
That'd be great. We can do a follow-up interview too.
oh, great. Okay, yeah. If we deem it worthy, yeah, I'd be
Yeah.
happy to. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thanks for your time. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ziv.
Speak to you soon.
Okay,
Bye.
goodbye.
All right. As promised, nice diverse chat there. I like how we've covered quite a few topics from an owner-occupier perspective, which is not something that we get into very frequently on the show, except of course in our JREP sessions with Emil, Matt, and Tracy. So I hope you found some value in this conversation. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.